Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your hosts, Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
The best guests, the best insight.
Lofton with his team down by two, to the corner, Caputo! No good! And it's over! St. Louis is going dancing!
All backed by over 40 combined years of covering the biggest events in St. Louis sports.
Blues have the puck. Thomas off the wall. Shoots, and it's in. They score! It's the St. Louisan, Pat Maroon. Bring out the Zamboni. Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he sends them to the conference finals.
Now, here are Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan KFNS and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank and Martin here till 12. Great program lined up for you today. Lester Munson is one of our all-time favorite guests.
He's going to think, and he's a great sports legal analyst or just legal analyst in general, he's going to think we had him on because the Cubs are slipping. That's what he's going to think.
I will admit I did mention that he can expect some taunting. When he's on about where the standings are right now, since they have narrowed that gap considerably, and he laughed.
But he's great. I'm sure he's a little north of 70, but he is instant offense. He's always been great on OJ, any topic. Looking forward to that. And then the commish, Dr. Hummel. I accidentally called him Dr. Hummel yesterday. We decided that might stick.
Dr. Hummel.
The doctor of baseball.
It was right after Dr. Rick, so we had Rick on the brain. So.
What was Dr. Rick's most interesting thought yesterday?
Let's see, we can't drink out of plastic bottles. Everything is going to kill us. Stay out of the heat.
A guy texted about one calf being bigger than the other, and it sounded not as bad. And then Dr. Rick goes, oh, that's bad.
Somebody had a bad elbow. Doesn't sound good. We were critiquing the doc's bedside manner. If he would tell somebody with cancer that they were hosed, that was a callback.
All right, our opening monologue brought to you by the great people at Worldwide Technology Raceway Gateway. Bomberito 500 coming next month. Let's begin with lap one. So in this wildly erratic season, the Cardinals wake up a half game out of first place. They wake up winners in 9 of their last 11. They wake up with a starting pitcher who's just so rock steady. 20 starts, 10 wins. And Dakota Hudson keeps the streak alive that Martin Kilcoyne pointed out so adroitly. Yes, not one game this season allowing more than 3 earned runs. And Martin, it took a gutsy fifth inning, bases loaded, nobody out, Hudson hellacious.
Up the middle, could be 2. DeYoung steps on the bag, double play! Bases loaded, nobody out. The Pirates cannot score. The strikeout of Bell. Moran grounds into his 6th double play. DeYoung positioned perfectly.
Getting the strikeout there and getting 0-2 on him and then getting the strikeout, that was huge. I knew that my next guy was, the next guy is a double play guy. So that was always my focus in that situation, just trying to manage and execute pitches and minimize the damage.
You know, he has the SEC background. He was a minor league pitcher of the year. And you know who he reminds me of in a way, and I hate to compare a young pitcher to a Hall of Famer, but Mike Mussina. His stuff may not be off the charts electric, but like Mussina, he just looks like he's going to win a lot of games for a lot of years. He even looks a little bit like Mussina. Not saying he's Hall of Famer, but boy, Martin, this guy's got composure.
Yeah, and if you are around him at all, you can tell he's very stable. You know, you don't see him. A lot of these young guys, you wonder temperament when they get out there, whether they're going to freak out, maybe get too excited. Have you ever seen him look excited?
No.
In a good way. Yeah. I think the Mussina personality may be a good... That might be a good match, too, just in terms of personality. But I think it's 11-1 in his last 12 starts. And we've been saying, who's that one pitcher? I mean, we put the whammy on Ponce de Leon pretty good last week. Who's the one pitcher to win one game? It's got to be a guy like Hudson, who is 11-1. And I think it's one game this year he was over 3 earned runs. So it's 20 out of 21 starts.
One DA gave up 4 may have been an unearned run.
I think he had one game early where it was 6 earned, real early in the season.
That does sound right.
So it's 20 of 21 where he gives up three or less.
So does Jack – the interesting, because you just talked about the contrast. With Jack Flaherty, he seems flashier and maybe has slightly better stuff, but Dakota is steadier. You know, and, you know that sinker? I love them both. You can have one for the next 5 years. Who do you take? Go ahead, Plowsy. This is a tough one.
I mean, I think talent-wise, Flaherty might be – have the bigger upside, but the safer pick is Hudson.
Flaherty got the full package, and I think you bet on upside more than I know. Dakota Hudson may seem like he's more consistent, but Flaherty's a guy that could get you a couple of seasons of 20 wins and, you know, a couple hundred K. So I would go with Flaherty just based upon solely talent-wise and athleticism. But, I mean, right now, if you had to pick one game or one guy to pitch one game in a wild card, it's Dakota Hudson.
But
right
for
now.
5 years, you would bet on the
Jack
guy with
Flaherty.
The higher.
Absolutely.
How about you, Brian?
Flaherty.
Yeah.
Now, Hudson did have that one start, 6 earned runs against Milwaukee back in April. He's had 2 starts in which 7 or more runs were scored, but 6 were unearned. And one interesting one against San Diego,
it was
7
his fault.
Runs. It was his air
yeah,
that
true.
Led to the unearned runs.
Hey, don't mess with my narrative
okay,
here.
I
it's
won't.
20 out of 21 with 3 earned runs or less.
All right, lap 2.
So yesterday we did lap 2 first. Frank doesn't know. We've been.
You flipped
around.
We
did lap 5.
We go in
second.
Order. Yeah, we go with disorder.
All right. So Paul Goldschmidt had the grand slam Monday. Then he opened up last night with a screamer to third. And then it was time for homer number 20.
And Goldschmidt hits it down the left field line. Hooking, and it's gone. The game is tied. He's starting to heat it up. 3-3, and that got out in a hurry.
6 homers, 19 RBIs this month, 925 OPS. Just imagine if he does that in August and September. Now, I ask this question, and I say this as Reggie Jackson being my all-time favorite athlete, who watched his homers like nobody else ever did. I love the Goldie run around the bases. So, do you prefer if the guy watches it for a while, we'll put Helly on too, or do you prefer just... a guy puts his head down, Scott Rowland, Paul Goldschmidt, and run around the base.
Give me a pimp job all day. I love Tim Anderson of the White Sox. Give me that all day. The passion.
He is good.
And get
yeah.
the fan base riled up. And I kind of like having the opposing team kind of hate you a little bit. I would love to see more players, you know, not so traditional and do the Jose Bautista, do something fun. You earned it.
All right. That's one. Brian?
Flip it and pimp it. On home
of
runs.
Course,
oh, the kids
CBC
here.
Absolutely, guy from the country.
You know, this is a terrible answer, but I don't think you can appreciate Rowland or Goldschmidt if you didn't have the guys who pimped it. Like, it's fun to have both. I mean,
yeah.
if everybody pimped,
oh, you're hedging.
But if everybody pimped
oh,
it,
right.
if they did, you guys would get sick of it, and you'd say, "Come on, enough's enough." If every guy was flipping their bat like Tim Anderson, it would get old.
When you're
quick.
Down 8 or 9 runs, I understand it, but in most situations,
in a big moment,
I'm all for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see Goldie hit like a walk-off playoff winner.
Jose Bautista.
And then just, and then all the, no, like Goldie all of a sudden do like cartwheels, like he'd been holding it all year.
Like the Matt Adams home run off it, like the excitement
yes.
that he showed. That was a big, like you said, the big time home run. That excitement is awesome because he got about 2 inches off the ground, I think, and that was great.
What about it, Ellie?
I think I'm going to go with Martin on this one.
Wait a minute, he just hedged. He was in the middle.
Yeah, I know, but like,
she interned at Fox, too.
Yeah, he was Switzerland.
No, I know, but then there's such overkill. If everyone's flipping their bat, then you don't want to see it. They're up 10-0. You don't want to see them flipping their bat.
I think. All about the situation, Martin.
Yeah.
So. All right, lap 3. I think the most difficult decision in the Mike Schilt regime is coming very, very soon. You just know the Cardinals making the postseason is going to come down to the final week of the season, okay? So every game really precious. Who knows? It could be just one game that decides the division or the postseason for the Cardinals. Maybe one hit. So here's the decision that Schilt's going to have to make. Matt Carpenter. He played last night. He went 0-for-3 with a K. And what do you possibly do? Does anybody think that this version of Carpenter gives you a better chance to win than, say, Tommy Edman, who has had all these clutch hits and last night had a Brooks Robinson throw from third base. It was unbelievable. Going to be a tough call. What do you think? Or do you just tell Matt Carpenter, you stay in Memphis till we see maybe 2 or 3 games of you going 2-for-4 and really barreling the ball?
Well, there is a theme now of paying guys to stay away. Brett Cecil, the latest example. And O'Brien pointed this out on Twitter. It was buried in the notes section of the paper. I think it was in Tuesday's section. But Brett Cecil is throwing to hitters in Florida. I mean, we sort of joked that we hadn't heard his name in a while. He had carpal tunnel. And the John Mozeliak quote was, and it's still July, correct? It's still July.
It's July 24th.
The season could extend to October. His quote was, "We're fine with Brett just focusing on 2020. The guy's pitching in Florida. He's making $7.5 million. Has there ever been a blank you more politely stated than just go ahead and focus on next year? So they have done that. But when it comes to Matt Carpenter, valued vet that they love and that they extended for no apparent reason, I think he'll come back, kind of like Fowler in the past. He'll get a shot. He'll get a window. But then I think at some point...
But this is a little different because this is really down the stretch. You're really in this thing. I mean, let's just say, you know, after three nights in Memphis, he's 1-for-12. Would you say, okay, yeah, Matt, let's come on up.
They will. They'll bring him back after a few games. Whether he gets a hit or not, they'll bring him back. I think they'll roll him out there. And then I think the decision will come after a week or so of him. If he comes back and he doesn't hit at all, then I think Schilt's going to make – I think he's going to make the tough call, and I think that's why he's here. It's you can't –
See, I don't know if you could just trot him out. If he goes 0-for-4 in St. Louis for like three games in a row, I don't know if you could say, okay, let's try it again.
And I think the problem there with that is, like, it's not like you're five games up, you know, or you have – you could take a couple games to shake off the rust. I mean, you're right in the thick of things. You're a half game back. You're 1-9-11 or something like that. You can't mess – You don't mess up a good thing. I know that's overstated a lot in sports, but you just, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And even if it's Matt Carpenter, I don't care what he did 9 months ago. What he's doing right now has not helped the team. You keep the good things rolling.
Is this possibly an instance of giving credit where credit isn't necessarily due, though? Tommy Edman, since the All-Star break, the entire time Carpenter's been on the DL, has an on-base of .268. He's not the catalyst for the team right
what
now.
What about Munoz?
But that's Gyro can play center.
Yeah,
can't
but
he?
You could play Fowler in center and
you can play Fowler
the guy
right.
Hit the home running right. Too.
I mean, there's a way to bring up Matt Carpenter and put him in the offense if you feel like he'll help. But you know, right now, and Munoz has hit the ball well. I'm loading up second half. His on base is .276 in the second half. It's not.
I think
we're overthinking all of this in the sense that Carpenter, Munoz, Edman. The answer to why they're hitting is Goldschmidt. That's the reason why they're winning right now, isn't it?
Well, I think what Frank's alluding to, though, I think there is Carpenter fatigue. You've seen him strike out enough, take that third strike, that you'd rather take a shot with a Munoz or an Edman, even if their numbers aren't dynamic. You feel at least you might get something out of it. You have no confidence right now that Carpenter is going to come out of it. They'll bring him back. You know they will. And they'll bring him, and they will put him in that lineup for 6 out of 7 games that first week back. Unfortunately, he's going to come back at a time where they're playing the Cubs, Dodgers, A's, a tough stretch.
Ooh, it's going to be rough.
And I think if he doesn't hit, if he looks bad when he comes back, I think then Schilt will sort of rotate him in and out. You certainly don't put him back at leadoff.
All right, lap 4. Spent the day at Mizzou with Barry Odom at the new South End Zone Project. And let me say this. I've been in hundreds of locker rooms. It's the best one I've ever seen. Ever. It's spacious, stylish, spectacular. They had these elegant 8x11 photos of each player over the locker. And all these wood cabinets and all this steel for each player. They placed their shoulder pads right above the locker in a drawer that dries them out immediately. It's a $98 million project. It's a 20,000 square foot weight room. Their last weight room was 12,000. And they had to share it with 19 other sports. They've had 350 people working on the project at a time. They have $4.5 million of video boards. I mean, when these guys are in the lap pool or in the whirlpool, they're watching like the SEC network. They have recovery pools, rehab pools. They have listen to this. We wanted to show some of this great video, and Odom said to me before I left, he said, you know, our players haven't seen it yet. Can you wait a couple of days? Because we're going to bring them in. They've been peeking in through the window, and they haven't seen it quite yet. So I said, okay, fine. But it is just, it's insane.
In a related note, at 5 o'clock today on Fox 2, we go behind the scenes with Barry Odom. You know, some of these locker rooms are obscene.
You can't preempt
it's almost
Golden
too
segment.
Much. The LSU thing, it's obscene. It's too much. But with Mizzou, It was sort of a dump. Remember those press conferences You couldn't even fit in there to do an interview. They'd bring players out. It'd be November, and they'd say, you may have to step outside. There was no room to even do your job.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the media area is filled with maybe 100 leather chairs and then a podium. And then the team meeting room looks like Werenberg Theater. This humongous screen, and there must be like 200 seats.
And for people saying, what a waste of money, you spend that money and you make money.
Yeah.
Football makes money, and the better your team is, the more money you're going
to
make.
Okay, now who here, or let's go to left five. Hit left five, we'll get to this. Who here brought up the fascinating question, 10-2 or 8-4?
Right here.
Okay, all right, very good. So, for people who don't know it, is it better to go 10-2 and have the sanctions stick and keep you out of the bowl process, or 8-4 after winning the appeal and maybe going to a lesser bowl? Well, I talked to the CFO of the athletic department, a nice gentleman named Tim Hickman, and you know what he said. He says, I get the 10-2, I get the buzz and how it helped recruiting, but I'm the CFO and we need money. And if they are a part of the SEC bowl process, you know, and get it's $10 million.
$10 million.
They're going to lose if they don't win this appeal.
Yeah, I didn't realize that element until Dave Mattis said it the other day, that they lose out on all of the money. Not just their money, but the SEC bowl money. That's a big check. Now, if Barry Odom is on the lie detector, well, I feel terrible for the university, but I got to get some kids here. I still think he'd take 10-2.
Yeah, I didn't ask the question to Odom, but I got to tell you, if you ask a coach if he wants to lose two games this season,
or lose four or five
with the potential of five,
right,
I know what the answer is.
By the way, if Howard Richards is listening, I still have Mizzou at 12-0, plus the bowl game.
And he loves his team, by the way. 14 returning starters, 6 possible draft choices, an unbelievable offensive line, stud running back, a winner at quarterback. Barry knows they're better this season than they were last year. He's really comfortable in his own skin for the first time. And he kind of opened up, Martin, about, you know what, he goes, I had some guys on the staff that, you know, I took, and then the other was that locker room and the whole, the protest. He goes, this just wasn't a great situation. He goes, now it's really sharp.
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect job because it's your alma mater and you played there, but the circumstances were less than perfect.
Yep.
And I think he even knows getting the job, Mac Rhodes probably looked around, so he had to kind of wait it out. And then you come off the Pinkel era where Pinkel had it his way for a long time, and you're trying to assert yourself, do things your way, and a lot of people around there probably were thinking, well, that's not how we do it. I mean, they had a 15-year run with one coach, so less than ideal situation to take over, but still the perfect job for a guy who played there.
All right, Dave Mattis had the article in the paper today about Mizzou's declining attendance. To make it real short and simple, 2014 they were averaging 65,000. Last year they drew 51,000. It's a combination of factors. But do you think, and we discussed it with them down there, do you think the biggest reason is Mizzou getting off to bad starts and that hurting attendance? Do you think it's the protest where they lost a percentage of fans and they ain't coming back? Or number three, and I never thought about this, is that the television experience with every game on TV, with walking 5 feet to a refrigerator and saving $200 and saving 5 hours of time, do you think that's the biggest reason? It's a combination of all three. What do you think the biggest one is?
I think the biggest is the protest, because I think they had a lot of people who came from around the state who made Mizzou football a thing every Saturday. There are a handful of people in St. Louis that will say, I'll go to a game here or there. But they had some diehards. They would probably know who those people are and the numbers that said forget it. But people that drove 2 hours every Saturday, that went to all those Mizzou games, that said I ain't coming back, I think that's a higher percentage than we realize.
Yeah.
That we're a loyal base. Now, some people will go to a game here, they don't care that there was a protest 4 years ago, but the percentage that went to all those games that stopped going, I still think that's a big deal. It's kind of crazy.
Any thoughts?
4 years later.
Plowsy?
I think not having as much local flair as far as local talent in there, I think obviously the protest has something to do with it. I just think mediocrity as far as beating top 10 opponent, being in the top 25, you know, getting consistent wins, not having one of those Kentucky debacles. And I think Pat Fitzgerald, as much as Mia Bryant probably didn't like that rant he talked about the phones, nobody getting there 4 hours before a game anymore. That's not happening. It doesn't matter if you're a diehard alumni of 40 years. Not many people are going to do that traditional 4-hour tailgate and then a 4-hour game. So I think you got to embrace the technology rather than complain about it. It's just a new age of live sporting event that you need to kind of attach some other things at stadiums to attract the younger audience. It's hard to do, but you can't just complain about it. You got to try to be able to counter that and make sure that these young kids are coming into the stadium that are going to the school.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of the protest, but also just the decline in college football attendance in general.
Yeah, in fact,
it's down nationwide.
That's a great point. Hallie, read those. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is the SEC percentage of stadium capacity filled average home games. Mizzou is in 14th with 72.3. Then we go Vandy, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi State, Texas A&M, LSU, South Carolina, Florida in fourth, Auburn in third, Bama in second, and number one is Georgia with 100% capacity.
100% capacity.
I mean, if you were to ask someone in St. Louis or Kansas City, not a diehard Mizzou fan, what would make you go to Columbia to watch a football game live, they'll probably say Alabama or some other big-time school, maybe Georgia. But in this age of every game on TV, and it's just easier and cheaper and more convenient to stay home or go to a bar or go to a friend's house, you're not going to make that two-hour trip to see Kentucky. You're not going to make that two-hour trip to even see Tennessee or maybe even South Carolina. It's just the convenience has overtaken and superseded the experience for
a
lot of
people. So you think that's number one, even ahead of the protests?
I think so. I mean, just look at the country. The whole nationwide attendance is down in college football.
Yeah. But when Mizzou was winning, and I'm talking like being in the top five, I know you're in the Big 12, and maybe you can't compete like that in the SEC like you did in the Big 12, but you were packing stadiums. You had name brand players that were nationwide being watched by other fans and other fan bases, having Heisman candidate, things like that. I think it's all about the players and all about being ranked. Nobody wants to see a 5-4 Missouri team go up against a 4-5 South Carolina team. If you win and you're ranked and you have a chance, you know, to compete in the SEC East, I think that's where it's at, too. For my generation, I want to see winning. I don't want to see mediocrity. I can watch that at home.
Well, they were bad in 15, and then Barry took over. They were bad in 16. I know they won the last couple of games there, but you also saw it kind of timed out, self-fulfilling. People that were mad at the program, then the next year they were terrible.
Yeah.
And people just kind of checked. People just kind of checked out.
All right, we do have one more. I think we have one lap. Lap six. Here it is, and this is fascinating. We're just going to do one thought here. Streeton Smith ranks the top 10 players at each SEC program. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, Martin, but they ranked the top 10 players for Mizzou, and I'm going to read this list.
Each roster's top 10 players, like most talented.
Of all time.
Oh, of all time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know my friend Mike Claiborne's going to be calling because it's the first thing I saw on this list, and that's what makes this
Randy
list
Potter.
Better. No. All right. Chase Daniel is one. Kellen Winslow is two. Brad Smith is three. Drew Locke is four, maybe a little high. Jeremy Maclin is five. Roger Worley is six. James Wilder is seven. Justin Smith is eight. Chase Kaufman is nine. And Brock Olivo is 10th.
Phil Bradley?
Exactly.
Phil Bradley's
very
good. Phil Bradley's got to be in that top 10.
And I think Brad Smith's number one. I love Brad Smith. He was my favorite college football player to watch. Even before I moved down to Missouri and considered being somewhat of a Mizzou fan, Brad Smith is so great. So I'm glad he made the top three. He is fantastic.
Drew Locke at four. You might want to bring that up with Tune In Strick on Friday. Which, by the way, last week during the slop overtime, we were talking about excitement for Mizzou, and it still went back to Drew Locke. And I told these guys they're banned from talking about the kid anymore.
Oh, my God.
Now, Phil Bradley's got to be on that list. Chase Kaufman over Phil Bradley. I can't buy that.
Yeah. They just hate Mizzou, period. And I'm telling you, the fact that Mizzou is going to be good, I mean,
well, Strick says Kelly Bryant's his guy. He's excited about Kelly Bryant.
Yeah, I know he's got a long relationship with Kelly Bryant.
But then they go back to Drew Locke.
Yeah, I think
if Barry Odom goes 10-2, I feel they'll still be criticizing Barry Odom.
Really?
Right? Don't you think?
Wow.
They'll be like, it was a soft schedule.
Dissect the two losses.
Right.
Yeah. You can't do that.
Should be Georgia. Georgia.
You had a chance and you lost by 20.
You lost to Florida with all those five stars? How could you do that?
Well, and with Strick now, we're not allowed to talk about the Blues. Only he is. So there's limited topics you can bring up.
What do you mean?
He basically will tell you.
He corrects you? Or?
Well, no, it's just, now you want to talk hockey. He's one of those guys.
Boy. I mean, he was
insufferable. Yeah. He was insufferable when they were good.
Yeah, 51 years
and,
of.
And now that they've won, he's insufferable. We can't win. Strick will be here Friday.
I feel a headache coming on there. Cough. Okay. Yeah,
we noticed Frank's one day he missed last week was Friday.
Yeah, interesting.
Slop day.
Okay, before we go to break, quick word about one of our great sponsors, and that is the Bomarito Automotive Family. I want to remind everybody that the Bomarito 500 is coming up at Worldwide Technology Raceway. It's one of the great sporting events of the year in St. Louis. 40,000, all those Indy cars will be racing at Gateway. It's going to be spectacular. We'll take a short time out. The Hall of Famer will come on next.